We've got a heck of a show planned for you this week. You're going to love hearing Caroline Stephen interview our team of trading experts so you can get the very latest market views, commentary, hints and tips. And here is Caroline now.
Hello and welcome to today's show. I'm Caroline Stephen. It's terrific to have your trading company. What did the experts think of the federal budget? Well, we find out today from tax accountant and star of Channel 10's The Living Room, Jason Cunningham. Jason gives us five highlights of the package and whether or not he thinks they were fair to Australians. Also hear what he thinks about our fuel prices and his advice for traders. Chris Tate shares his Did You Know segment for a fascinating look at the South Sea bubble. Be the smartest person in the room and soak up Chris's history come market lesson, which highlights that there really is nothing new under the trading sun. We also have some special report tips. Stay tuned.
I'm Dr. Harry Stanton. I'm the author of Let the Trade Winds Flow, and I listen to Talking Trading.
Jason Cunningham is a money man who knows what he's talking about. Star of Channel 10's The Living Room and partner of the practice accounting firm, he helps people get off the debt treadmill and transform their financial situation. We talk to him now about the ins and outs of the latest federal budget and how it affects working Australians. Hi, Jason.
Hi, Caroline. How are you?
What did you think about the federal government budget?
You know us accountants, Caroline, we get really excited this time of year, almost as excited as we do at June 30. No, not really. Look, usually, Caroline, each year when the budget comes out, I'm scouring through the budget to try and find opportunities of ways to make a bit of extra cash. You know, usually because there's a tax loophole that's dropped out or there's an opportunity for us. And unfortunately, this year, there wasn't any of that at all. I think the government did a great job in pre-warning us that it was going to be a bit of doom and gloom. You know, we live in a country where we don't really like surprises at all, do we? And so what they've done, you know, probably as early as 6 weeks leading out to the budget, they threw out little snippets in the media as to what we were in store for and to get us prepared for the bludgeoning that was going to take place.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the salient points of the budget. What did you like about it?
Not a heap, honestly. Look, I guess if I look at it as an overall perspective, Caroline, the government have come out and said directly to us that, look, whether you are a government, a business, a family, an individual, it is not sustainable practice for you to continually spend more money than you earn. And this is the situation that our government has found itself in. I'll give you an example. It wouldn't be prudent financial advice, Caroline, if you came to me and said, hey, Jason, I earn $150,000 a year for the sake of the argument. Now, you and I both know that you earn that every month. But let's say for the sake of the argument, you're earning $150,000 a month and you were spending, if you're earning $150,000 a year and you were spending $350,000 a year. If you said to me, Jason, can you give me a hand here? I need some prudent, sound financial advice. I'd say, pay me up front. No, I would. Because I don't think you can. Now, it wouldn't be sound advice for me to say, hey, Caroline, what you can do is go to your banker, refinance your property so that you can get more equity out of it so that you can continually fund your spending habits. That wouldn't be sound advice at all. I would say to you, sound advice would be, hey, prune your spending and increase your income so that there is not this massive disconnect between what you spend and what you earn.
And that's what Australia's been doing.
Well, that's right. Now, the other side of you look at the other side of the coin, the other argument is, but hang on a minute, Jase, if you compare us to the rest of the countries in the world, particularly the pigs, as they like, Portugal, Italy, Ireland, Greece, Spain, those countries in parts of Europe, we're actually faring pretty okay.
So did you just call them the pigs?
Yeah, it's an economic term. It's not my. I wasn't the one that labelled them the pigs. I actually went to Italy last year. I thought it was a beautiful place. But this is in terms of it's just a little acronym there. You know, us accountants, we like acronyms. Like it's like CPA, car parking attendant. Little acronyms. So those guys, they're in a whole heap of hurt. Their debt is out of control, and our level of debt compared to theirs is nowhere near as bad. But our government's made a decision to say, hey. Well, we're ready now. We're going to make a bit of hay while while the sun shines or while the rain's raining. I don't know. And they're going to chew down that debt as fast as they can. So I guess the five highlights. Well, I don't necessarily like to call them highlights, but high-level points. The first is income tax. So the first point is that the government's going to introduce a, they've called it a budget repair tax or a deficit levy. So that's on income above $180,000 per annum. There's going to be an additional 2% levy. So in essence, what it's doing is it's pushing that top marginal rate from 47 cents in the dollar up to 49 cents.
Fair or unfair in your opinion?
Well, if you want my actual opinion, I don't agree with it at all. I'll be quite controversial. I don't think it makes sense to tax somebody on how much they earn. I think what makes sense is to tax people on what they spend. So if it was me, and if I was running the country, and it would not be a very popular vote, but I would increase the GST. That's what I would do. Because what I do know is this, the more money we earn, typically the more we spend. And the best way, what I would do is I'd look to actually give people some tax cuts. I'll give them a sweetener and say, hey, I'm going to give you some tax cuts, at knowing that the rule is the more I earn, the more I spend. So if I give people more money in their purse each week or more money in their bank account each month, I know they're going to spend it all.
Second highlight.
Well, this one's a killer. A lot of families are going to get really hurt, middle-class families, because what the government's doing with the family tax benefits, so there's two types of family tax benefit A and family tax benefit B. One of the most convoluted handouts that no one really understands it, but what I do know is this, that has been reduced. If you earn more than $100,000 a year, that family tax benefit has been taken away from you. Now, you used to be able to earn up to $150,000 a year and still receive family tax benefit B. But now, if you earn more than $100,000, that's taken away from you.
So unfair?
Now, that is so unfair because it's about $4,000 per child per year. Now, you think about it. Imagine you're on a fixed income, you and your husband, and you've got two kids, and you're earning, for the sake of the argument, $125,000 a year. So therefore, you were receiving $8,000 a year of government support, and now it's taken away from you. It's a massive, massive impost on a middle-class family, I would have thought. So I'm not overly excited with that. Third highlight, if we like, or lowlight, is changes to the health system. As we know, we're going to pay $5 more for prescription drugs. I think the narcotics and illicit drugs are going to stay the same at this point. No, I'm only joking. So, that was a joke. And $7 more to see doctors. Now, of that $7, the docs are going to get $2 additional money into their pockets, but $5 of that's going to go towards being injected into a medical research future fund. And I think that's one thing we do really well in this country. I think I think our medical system's pretty good, actually.
I've got to say, the doctors I've spoken to all like the new medical levy.
Yeah, well, it's going to hurt some people. There's no doubt about it, but I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. It's only $7, and so it might stop people from going to see the doctor unnecessarily, perhaps.
What do you think about the research centre?
I think another theory of mine is I think not only our economy, but the global economy, but particularly our economy, is going through a massive change. We've obviously seen the closing or the future closing of the automotive industry, which is, quite depressing. But, we've got to change with the times. And because we live in a global economy where the cost of labour for things like manufacturing and factory work can be outsourced overseas at a significantly reduced price, then we need to put our hands up and look for other areas as to what's going to be the future of this country. And I think that medical research and biotech and that sort of stuff, I think that's going to pave the way for, a big future for our country.
Highlight number four.
Again, not necessarily a highlight, but more like a low light. Fuel levy excise. We're going to get that twice a year, so we're going to pay more at the pump. The whole cost of petrol, actually, Caroline sends me bananas in pyjamas coming down and going up the stairs, to be honest with you. I'm not overly excited at all. I don't like, none of us understand the cost of petrol. We don't. Now, in Economics 101, they told me, Jason, it's all got to do with demand and supply. How many oils, how many barrels of oil and all this sort of stuff coming out of, the Gulf and all this sort of stuff. But why then on Anzac Day holiday does the price of petrol go up in Australia? It doesn't make sense to me. We're going to pay more for petrol and that's going to go up twice a year. The excise is going to rise in accordance with the inflation twice a year.
What do you think the solution to that is?
Well, I think that the solution would be that our government should perhaps grow a pair, okay? Really allow the ACCC to come in and be able to hit people over the head with price collusion when it comes to petrol. I think that's what I'd like to see. putting an additional excise or increasing the excise in accordance with inflation, I don't necessarily have a problem with that. What I do have a problem with is the way that price fluctuates, you know, in accordance to when you and I need it most in this country, when really our oil doesn't even come from here. It comes from, you know, the other side of the world. So you can't tell me it's got to do with demand and supply. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't like collusion. I don't like price collusion.
Highlight, right. Low light number five?
Highlight number five is retirement. It's very interesting here. They're saying that if you're born after the 1st of January 1966, pick up sticks, that you won't be able to retire or receive, you can retire at any stage you like, but receive an old age pension until you're 70 years old. And I have a profound problem with this. And I think the issue is this, right? Let's say, I know I started paying tax when I was about 14 or 15, okay, when I got my first job. I reckon that if we work till the age of 65 and we've paid tax for 50 years, I think there's a chance that we could say, you know what, Jase, you've paid your dues. Here's a little bit back, cobber, you know?
Mm.
Well, I think we're wonderful as we, you know, as we come into this world in this country. We've got the brilliant hospitals. You know, my boys were born, I got three boys, but my twins were born 11 and a half weeks premature, and they were looked after by the best hospital in the world. It was magnificent. But when we go out, when we exit, we're not really that kind and that friendly. And do you know that currently the old age pension for a single pensioner is $21,000 a year? That's $400 a week.
It's crazy.
It's $33,000. Now, I reckon that's pretty disgusting. And I reckon, you know, probably double that.
Yeah, in Sydney, you could not survive on that.
How could you without family support? Or, well, you could, but you wouldn't. I don't think it would be a good standard of living.
So how do you suggest we address the ageing population?
We should get everyone to start smoking cigarettes at an earlier age so they die.
Overall, is the budget fair to Australians?
That's a good question. I would say the measures that took place were needed. I don't necessarily agree with the exact measures that were brought into place, particularly around retirement and family tax benefits. I do agree, though, that the government should spend less and raise more revenue. How I would do that would be by increasing the GST.
How will the budget affect traders?
Great question, Caroline. I guess it'll affect traders in the same vein it'll affect everybody else. Traders are no different. Well, they are a little bit different, as we know, a little bit quirky, especially if you look at someone like Chris Tate. But I shouldn't say that. He's a friend of mine. Really, it's going to be around how we spend our money. And for those traders that are earning good profits in excess of $180,000, they're going to pay that extra levy if it gets passed. So, yeah, I think in the same vein it'll affect everyone else.
Any advice to traders?
Be nice to your mother. our mums always love us, you know that.
Jason Cunningham, thanks for your time.
Caroline Stephen, always a pleasure.
And now here are some tips from my special report, 50 Trading Tips to Fuel Your Profits. Number one, get serious about time management. Even Ed Sakota, one of the greatest traders of all time, only has 24 hours a day. Number two, realise that not everybody will share your passion for the markets. Insulate yourself against the dream stealers out there. Number three, your family can be your greatest cheerleader, or they can be your most significant impediment. Weirdly, how you think makes it so, one way or the other. To download my free special report, go to talkingtrading.com.au/special report. Ever heard of the South Sea Bubble? Well, here's some detail as well as an angle that may be new to you, as Chris Tate shares his fascinating Did You Know segment. Chris proves that there really is nothing new under the trading sun, and the bubbles in the markets have been going on for centuries.
Did you know that if you looked up a list of the top 10 most influential physicists of all time, you would consistently find the name Isaac Newton, Neil, or at the very top of the list? In fact, if you actually look at any straw poll of the most influential scientists of all time, Newton is always in the top three. In fact, Newton is considered one of the most towering intellects of all time. Born in 1642, Newton's achievements included laying the basis for classical mechanics, contributing to the development of optics, formulating the laws of motion and gravity, and he shares with Gottfried Leibniz the dubious distinction of the invention of calculus, that branch of mathematics that has been tormenting high school students ever since. However, in intellect, Newton was human like the rest of us, and during the height of the South Sea bubble, he was reputed to have said, "I can calculate the motion of heavenly bodies, but not the madness of people." Interestingly, Newton was not only referring to the general mania that grips crowds, he was also speaking of himself. The latter part of Newton's life was spent living with his niece, Catherine Conduit, and she reported that during the South Sea bubble he had lost some £20,000. But of this, however, he never much liked to hear of it. This is a staggering sum of money at the time, when you consider that the cost to build Nelson's flagship, HMS Victory, was only £63,000. The issue with modern traders is that they believe that they are seeing and doing everything for the first time, and this applies to their observation of bubbles. So in this respect, they're a little bit like teenagers who believe that they have discovered having sex in the back of the car, when it's actually been going on since Henry Ford made the mass market car affordable. And heaven forbid, their parents probably did the same thing and thought the same thing. This ignorance of the history of markets and those who've gone before reflects a deeper malaise among traders, since so few modern traders are actually students of the market. Being a student of the history of the market teaches you so much more about trading than the cloistered confines of the internet and talking heads on TV. And it is so much more meaningful than looking for the next magic super-duper indicator or responding to some idiot's infomercial. So if we go back to the South Sea bubble that Newton was caught in, this is not the first crash to have occurred. The first crash to have occurred will be a topic for a later discussion. But the South Sea bubble shares so many features with what we associate as being thoroughly modern that it deserves some investigation. The South Sea bubble revolved around the trading activities of the South Sea Company, which was founded in 1711, and it was created as a public-private partnership to consolidate and reduce the cost of national debt. Its main line of business, in fact, its only line of business really, was slavery. The company was granted a monopoly to trade with South America, hence its name. At the time it was created, Britain was involved in the War of Spanish Succession and Spain controlled South America. When initially issued, the company's stock had a guaranteed interest rate of 6%, and it did sell well. But the subsequent peace treaty between Spain and Britain was less favourable than many had hoped for, in that it imposed an annual tax on imported slaves and it only allowed the company to send one shipment each year for general trade. So it was quite a restrictive little business arrangement that the South Sea Company had got themselves into. The first voyage occurred in 1717, but was only moderately successful. Things began to change from that point on, though, because King George I became governor of the company in 1718. As you would expect, this created confidence in the enterprise. The yield, the rate of return from the stock, moved quickly towards 100%. You can see how this would be unsustainable in the real world. But you also see something deeper. You see the unhealthy relationship between government and business that has become part of what we consider the modern way of doing business. Having a member of the royal family involved in your company could be considered the ultimate form of lobbying and is certainly a match for any of the lobbying that a modern-day spiv would do. In 1720, there was an incredible boom in the South Sea stock as a result of the company's proposal, which was accepted by Parliament, to take over the management of the national debt. It should be remembered that at this time the functioning government treasuries was extremely unsophisticated, and at the time it depended upon things like lotteries to raise funds. So you have a very, very embryonic financial system. You have a very, very naive way of doing things. So the attraction of appointing an instrumentality like the South Sea Company to take this over for you was very, very attractive. And it wasn't long before bucket shops spruiking the shares were popping up everywhere, and investors, both large and small, were encouraged to borrow to buy shares. So margin lending and the problems that it brings inside mania is not a new thing. It is not something that was suddenly invented in the run-up to the tech reg of 2000. This sort of behaviour has been going on for millennia. So when you think you're doing something new or seeing something new, you're not actually doing so. However, by September of that year, the market had collapsed. And by December, South Sea shares were down to £124. They had been over £1,000. So they'd taken a staggering hit. And at the same time, they'd taken both government and other stock with them. So the panic that afflicted them spread like contagion throughout the market. As you would expect, many investors were ruined, and the House of Commons ordered an inquiry into how this had occurred. This showed that at least three ministers had accepted bribes and had speculated on the company's share ahead of information that they held. Many of the company's directors were disgraced. This is the sort of behaviour you would expect to see in New South Wales politicians. The New South Wales politicians were clearly not doing it first. The scandal brought Robert Walpole, who is generally considered to be the first modern British Prime Minister, to power. His platform was one of seeking out all those who'd been responsible for the scandal, but in the end he only sacrificed a few of those involved to preserve the reputation of the government. The South Sea Company itself survived until 1853, having sold most of its rights to the Spanish government nearly a century earlier. The intriguing thing about the South Sea bubble is that it shares so many features with modern bubbles. The company never had a realistic expectation of making any money. In fact, there never seems, looking at the historical documentation, any intention of making money. It was set up effectively almost like a giant pump and dump scheme. Directors of the company tried to mix personal business with the business of the company. John Harley, who had been one of the directors of the company, attempted to ship personal goods on company ships. This has shades of Brian Quinn and Coles Meyer using company workmen for private business. The company had very, very close ties with politicians who spruiked the company and who sought to profit from it in a way that would make modern politicians very proud. The company itself, instead of undertaking its business, spent most of its time actually talking about share price, in much the same manner that internet companies did more than a decade ago. The intriguing thing about this is, to me, it highlights that there is nothing new. Everything repeats itself. So when you think you are seeing and doing something for the first time, many, many others have gone before you. And it is only in being a student of the market that you can actually understand this. When you actually start to get out and look at what went before you, do you understand that these things occurred? And this can best be summed up in the phrase that what has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun.
That's all we have for you today. I'd like to thank our contributors, Jason Cunningham and Gigantor, Chris Tate. Stay tuned next week for our first guest from the United States, internationally renowned trading coach and best-selling author, Adrian Togrii. Adrian's work is featured in major trade magazines and newspapers all around the world, and she joins Talking Trading next week to share about how to get the most out of yourself and the markets. Make sure you tune in to listen to her wisdom. I'm Caroline Stephen, and on behalf of the team, thanks for joining us. See you next time.
You've been listening to talkingtrading.com.au with Caroline Stephen. Make sure you are subscribed to this website to receive the very latest market views, commentary, and expert opinion. Tune in next week as we've got a bumper show planned. Bye for now.
The views represented on Talking Trading are general in nature and do not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Before acting on any information, consider its appropriateness in regard to your own situation.